Hi there and welcome to Everyday Business with me, Aidan Donnelly. I've been analysing and investing in companies for nearly 30 years and I'm fascinated by how the companies operate, the entrepreneurs who start them and the business people and managements that run them. In this podcast, I'll be talking to a whole host of people with different stories, backgrounds and journeys, learning about their businesses and gleaning some insights and lessons from their experience. For those that are listening, don't forget to like, share and subscribe if you enjoy what you hear. So without further ado to today's episode, Exemplars Ireland's trusted energy advisor, combining deep market expertise with personal dependable service for businesses that cannot afford to get the energy decisions wrong. They bring together expertise across energy procurement, market trading, engineering and on-the-ground performance. This joined-up capability allows them to look beyond price alone and help clients to make smarter, more defensive decisions over the short term and the long term. Whether you're a large energy user managing significant risk exposure or a complex multi-site business looking for clarity and control, their advice is tailored to the client's reality. Exemplar were founded by Jonathan and Vincent Fitzpatrick with a clear belief. The better energy advice comes from combining technical expertise with human relationships. With over 15 years experience in the energy markets, Vincent leads Exemplar's trading strategy and market execution. He oversees hedging and risk management programs for some of Ireland's largest energy users, working closely with procurement and engineering teams to ensure fully aligned client solutions. With over 20 years' experience in energy markets, Jonathan leads product development and supplier engagement across Exemplar. He ensures clients benefit from innovative structures and forward-looking procurement solutions, working in partnerships with trading and energy colleagues to deliver the joined-up energy strategy. Lads, you are very welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us, Aidan.
I hope I got everything there right.
We can always edit it out in a minute. Talk to me about both your careers before Exemplar and then what ultimately made the two of you come together to set up the company.
Yeah, well, fair enough. I think with St. Vincent being twins, we've always kind of been joined at the hip from school. I think the only time we went our own separate direction was in college. So I studied business in college and then I did a postgrad in marketing in Galway. And Vincent went his route and did information systems in UCC and then went to KPMG for his training. The idea for the business came about in 2008. And I think we were lucky enough that we had an older brother who was very innovative, entrepreneurial. And I think when we seen that he could do it, we did it as well. So when Vincent was in KPMG, he was involved with a number of audits with different companies. He seen energy as a high cost. At that time, I was working for a building company in Wexford. They were building sustainable hotels at the time. And I seen an opportunity that sustainability was going to be a thing in the future. And I had the idea of looking at sustainability. At that time, Vincent was finishing up in KPMG and seen the opportunity to look at energy contracts. And that's where the business was founded in 2009.
So when you think about it, although you kind of landed on the business, was the intention always to own your own company, do you think?
Always.
Yeah, well, like our brother Karen has mentioned, he was successful at the time. You know, we weren't scared or worried about going into doing our own business. Yeah. And at the age we were 26, 27 years of age at the time, it was a good time to start before having a family. So the way we looked at it, it didn't have a huge risk. At the time, we didn't need a lot of capital to start up the business that we went into, and that it was a consultancy. My own skill set of accounting, more analytical, and Jonathan from a sales perspective, you know, we were in a good foundation to start a business. So it was just at that time, with Jonathan's work in the energy space, that it was a good time to go into it.
And do you think, we've had a lot of entrepreneurs on the show, and it's, there's two types. There's one that go out and say, we're an entrepreneur and we need to find a business, or those that kind of find a problem, get a solution, and the business almost kind of develops out of that. Are you kind of the latter, do you think?
Yeah, I think we're the latter. I think when we were looking at sustainability at the start and looking at energy efficiency, we kind of stumbled into the meeting clients, and I remember starting with a couple of independent super value stores. And one thing that came up was efficiency was important, but also was the price that they were paying for their energy. And at that time, I remember ringing Vincent saying, there might be an opportunity in this space. We researched it, and at the time, there was very little competition in the market. So that definitely, we tripped into it probably at that stage. So we seen an opportunity in energy efficiency, tripped into the whole energy procurement side. But then Vincent's analytical background meant that it was a good fit for the business.
And did it worry that you hadn't been working in the energy procurement bit or anything else before that?
No, it didn't. The when we started getting energy bills from different types of clients, learning from that, learning from speaking to clients, and once we had enough of a portfolio or enough volume on the book, we could actually go to suppliers with a bit of strength in that we can go to them and get a better price, get a better product for our clients. So instead of getting a fixed price product, they can get more of a strategy around it, mm-hmm. and that will allow them to trade a market and do trading at different times. That would be more optimal, because up to that point, you had to be a very large energy consumer to actually go out to the market and buy at different times.
Right.
Whereas the way we approached it, we brought a group of clients together. We had enough volume then to allow the smaller clients who still had a high spend, who could still be spending 100, 200,000 a year on their electricity, just give them the opportunity that they just didn't have to lock in at renewal time, which could be in the middle of winter, when in fact they might be better off trading during the summer months when prices are low and locking at that stage. So the learning curve was steep at the start, but again, the more clients we worked with, the different types of tariffs and bills, the more educated and more confident we got to develop strong strategies for the client and to implement them with suppliers.
So it's almost what made the difference there was the aggregation of, as you say, not small users, but not big enough users to be able to go direct themselves.
Correct, yeah. Or even at that time, going back to 2009, a lot of companies that we went to were actually on out of contract rates.
Okay.
So like the market wasn't like, you say now the market at the moment is a busy space.
Yeah.
Back in 2009, we had three competitors. So we were welcomed with open arms. When we went to clients, we went in the door, they took out their bill, and a lot of the time they were on out of contract rates. The out of contract rates were 35 to 40% at times higher than what you could get in contract.
Right.
So I remember at the time people saying, this is phenomenal service. I can't understand why other people aren't offering it.
Yeah.
Now the market has changed since that time, but we were definitely early into the market. So like when people say it to us, you know, were you smarter? Did you get lucky? A bit of both. But luck definitely had a big part of it. Mm.
And do you think when you look at it, like those clients in the early days, it wasn't that they were, they certainly wouldn't have been happy with the price they were paying, but energy, although a big part of the business, they just didn't either have the resources to manage it themselves or the knowledge to manage it themselves. And they just said, look, I have the business to run. This is a different part of the business that I just don't have the time to add to.
100%. Yeah. We're a firm believer that energy is one thing or one less thing that you shouldn't have to worry about. And that's where we go in. So like some of the big multinationals will have an energy department and they may have people, employ 3-4 people looking at energy markets every day. Mm. If you're not of that scale, then you'll need somebody that can actually act on that. So like, even our biggest clients will say to us, so guys, we can't look at the market every day. Mm. We need somebody to actually do that on our behalf. Somebody that we can trust, somebody with integrity, somebody that actually understands what they're doing. And that's where we fit in. Mm.
Explain to me the customer experience in terms of start to finish this customer journey that your customers go on.
Yeah, so initially from meeting the client, we get a sense of where they're currently at. You know, do they understand the complexities around the energy markets? At that stage, we analyse their bills. We get all of the usage data, so looking at the energy profile, when they use their power. Can they manipulate the power to move it to different times of day, which are cheaper? We bring it away and we come back to them with a list of product options. So a lot of clients in the market might think they can just go into a fixed product or a flexible product that they can make trade in. We bring them with all options in relation to doing corporate power purchase agreements where you're buying from solar farms or wind farms, right through to fixed, flex and power-based products. So there's a whole suite of products that are available in the market that clients are not aware of and they don't understand. So we're there to reduce the complexity to make sure they understand that. So the next stage of the process is we go and tender to the market with all of the energy suppliers. We come back. We analyse all the data, we analyse all the products, and we run calculations showing what the forecast will be on each option, what the risks and rewards are for each one. And we sit down with the client and discuss it. And for each client, it's different. Some budget is key. Others are willing to take more of a risk in the market, but to a certain point. And that's where we really strive in that. We put a strategy in place that we'd have a cap and collar approach, that if the price moves from a certain level, we can hedge out and protect them from any further increases. But on the downside, just making sure there's volume open to get the monthly or the day ahead price that tends to be favourable in the market.
Yeah. And you know, we're obviously Iran war going on at the minute. You know, when if you look back at the Ukraine war, right, and when it started, and what we saw with energy prices, did it lead to a massive influx then of queries from people that suddenly had probably parked the energy decision for themselves years ago and didn't even think about it, and then suddenly it got too big of a problem to sweep under the carpet anymore?
Yeah, look, I think the timing of the podcast is relevant, you know, with Iran at the moment. I think, even though Iran at the moment is volatile and we're seeing price swings, they're not quite anywhere near at the extreme of the time of the Ukraine.
Okay.
Like at the time of the Ukraine, if your spend was €1 million, your next contract would be coming in at €3.5 million. Yeah. So the swings were crazy. So like, and that's where it's difficult. We had successful Irish companies and we had them fixed in, and then they could be coming out of contract in 7-8 months time. They're looking for budget figures for the new contract. And even if they were very profitable, it was eating hugely into the profit that they were making and energy only. Iran at the moment, we've seen adjustments in prices, but compared to maybe prices increasing by 20, 25 cents per kilowatt hour, prices at the moment are probably up about 4 to 5 cents per kilowatt hour. Now, it's still real money, and it's still something that needs to be managed, and it's something that even today on the way up to this podcast, probably on the phone all of the way, trying to look after clients and looking at exposure and looking at products for them. And that's what Vincent said earlier. There's a number of products in the market. There's some products that are gas indexed.
Right.
And gas is the main thing at the moment with the Strait of Hormuz. With cargoes coming through or can't get through. But there's other products out there that are wind indexed or power indexed.
Okay.
So there's different products that we can look at to try and mitigate the price increase that customers are looking at the moment.
Would you say the energy market, you know, with renewables and everything, is even more complex now than it was when you started the business?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
There's a lot more options.
Yeah.
Like, as Jonathan mentioned, when we started the business, there wasn't many consultants in the space.
Yeah.
Now there's a huge amount. And like, what we do for clients is we make sure that we're speaking to the energy suppliers. We meet them regularly and we go through what we need for the clients. So with changes in the market, or with more wind coming on the grid and more solar, there's ways that clients can gain from that. And it's just ensuring that the right product is in place with suppliers. Mm. So it's through the likes of Exemplar Energy that we're able to get suppliers to make the change. Because we have enough volumes with them or enough prospective clients to move to them for them to actually make those changes and benefit the client.
Yeah, and just to add to that, like if you looked at even 4 or 5 years ago, we would have multinational clients on to us and say, look, we have sustainability targets. Is there any way we can get a percentage or a majority of our energy from a renewable asset in Ireland, and they have their sustainability goals? Up to 4 years ago, even 3 years ago, you couldn't do that.
Right.
Like it was the big tech companies for data centers, they're going to energy suppliers or developers and taking all of the power from that asset. But for smaller companies, getting the power from the assets were too big. Mm-hmm. You'd have a big sell-off exposure. But in the last 2 years, suppliers are now being able to split up assets among different customers. So that's kind of a product choice that has changed over the last year and a half to 2 years. So it is evolving.
And just added another layer into the whole decision for the customer ultimately.
And then even, you know, the price can look attractive, but you really need to look at it. You know, if you're a company and you don't operate on a Saturday and Sunday, you're still agreeing to buy whatever that wind is produced at that time.
Yeah.
So if you're not using it, then you're selling it back to the market and there's a risk associated.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we pride ourselves in that. Picking a product isn't just about picking the one that looks the cheapest. It's actually evaluating it correctly and knowing that your decision is the right one.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes to the client relationships, presumably they're quite long-term in nature, although a contract may roll on a year-to-year basis. Like somebody comes in, meets you, does the first time consultancy, that's not it. That's only the start. And every year, their business will change, the prices will change, you know, the availability will change, the decisions will change.
That's crazy. Look, typically it's a 1 to 3 year a contract that is agreed with an energy supplier that we put in place. But we have clients now from when we started, so we have got some clients for 20 years. The retention rates of Exemplar will be in the high 90s, 90%. Like we pride ourselves in doing what's right for the client, and making sure that they stay with us and continue to work with us in the future. But in relation to an ongoing management, we're validating invoices, we're giving them updates on what's happening in the market regarding pass-through charges, for example, that change every October, how that will affect their budget. And of course, then there's the active management of the energy component when you're trading and making decisions on that. So it is all-encompassing. And in the last number of years, we have the engineering side of the business. That's brought about just due to demand from clients. They've been asking us ad hoc queries around heat pumps, solar, wind.
Okay.
So we made a decision about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, to start an engineering side to the business. We have 5 chartered engineers that work with our client base to put in solar, to do wind, to reduce your consumption. So we know price is important, but it, the other side of it is just as important, if not even more, because if they can save 1 kilowatt hour, it's a direct saving.
Yeah.
You know, with the rates.
Okay. Do you consider it a family business, right? In the traditional sense of what people think of, we have a family business, or do you just think of it as a business that the two of you work in and you happen to be family?
Yeah, I wouldn't look at it as a family business. No, I think it's just happens that we're brothers in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think my son Vincent, to always look at the business, even like our first hire, when we started off in a small room in Little Island in Cork, was a person in sales. And we still say to him to this day that without him being successful, he allowed for the growth of Exemplar. Not my son Vincent, we're part of it, but he pushed us on to the next level.
Okay.
Without the revenue that he brought in, that gave us the belief that we could hire the next person, then the next person after it. So like, our guys get sick of it every year when at a Christmas party, I just said, look, guys, actually, we genuinely believe it, that like, you're as instrumental to Exemplar success as we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like, the culture in the business is always one that's based on a big gratitude to the staff that we have, but we also make sure that we look after them and that they have areas of growth, that their opinion is valued. And that's something that we actually really care about. Yeah. So is it a family business? It's a family business to me that there's a family of 17 of us at the moment, and we all get on very well and we all care for each other and we all do
you
the right thing.
You may not have the same surname, but no, it's still a family ethos.
Yeah, it is. I think we're small enough still as 17 people where we can have that, where we can speak to each other on a daily basis. You know, we catch up about what's going on in each other's lives. It's more than work in a way.
But then working as a duo, right, and being brothers, where does the kind of the business end and the personal life? Like, if you're going for around each other's house at the weekend, is the business talked or is the business?
Yeah, we don't have to talk about business if we see each other at the weekends. Like, you know, going to the rugby match here now on Saturday, but which other than we won't mention business.
We
won't. Like, the business itself is somewhat divided in that Shetland is more sales, more SME side of the business, more dealing with the suppliers. I'm more large energy user, so there is a bit of division already. But we're talking every day, multiple times a day on the phone, or when we're in the office a couple of days a week, about business. But outside it, we tend not to speak about it.
And the other thing too, you kind of allude to a little bit there, you know, when you set the business up, right, you obviously had the kind of the accountants in the background, you were much more the sales folks. But with any business, setting up any business, there's a lot of other hats that have to be worn as entrepreneurs, right? So how did you manage that? Did you literally have to go, well, I'm good at this part of it, you're good at that part of it, and then you brought somebody in terms of the first,
you know,
guy?
I believe it or not, I think it was like, even now to this day, like my son Vincent, since 2009, have never had a cross word to each other. We don't argue with each other. We never give out to each other. We rarely disagree, if ever disagree. I think because he's my twin, we know each other inside out. And if he has an opinion on something, and I think he knows more than I do, we just go get on with it. If I have an opinion, he just says, Jonathan, that's fine, get on with it.
Yeah.
So like, that's the way we've been since day one. So the roles, I think Vincent knows what I'm good at and he knows what I'm not good at.
Yeah.
And vice versa. So like, we never sat down and said, Vincent, your role is going to be chasing invoices or chasing payment. It kind of does work out. He said, Jonathan, you like meeting people. You deal with energy suppliers. You like meeting customers. You customer focused. So that's the way it worked out. And then anything that was complex, I knew that Vincent was the man for that job. So he automatically got anything.
He was more than happy to hand that over.
If there's a bill come in, I was like, Jesus, this looks hard. I was quick to pass it on.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that's where it worked out. And then having Carl, her brother, in the background, he'd been there, he made mistakes, he learned from mistakes. So he was a great sounding board. So
and an independent referee every now and again.
Yeah, and you know what? And I remember he gave us an office down in Fermoy, and we kind of went down every day and we were doing cold calling out of that at the very beginning. And he was always in the room next door. So if you were stuck and stuff, you could go into him and just ask him a question. So we had good support. But yeah, I just think, like, St. Vincent, just probably just respect each other, and that was it.
Mm. But even to touch more on the roles there, like, I would have no experience in sales before, you know, but I did find I had to do it. Mm. Like, and I realised quick enough that there is no business without actually going outside, you know. So I found that I had to, at the start, we may have done meetings together, you know, for the first couple of months, but then after that, I was on my own. But I soon realised that I didn't need to be the stereotypical salesperson. If I spoke to a client and they knew what I was on about, and I could guide them correctly, that gave me confidence to deal with them.
And you had the authenticity when you met that client, and they knew their business, and therefore you knew their demands, and you were able to point to a problem.
I'd have the confidence in knowing with the knowledge that I have, with energy markets, that I knew I could guide them right. So I think clients kind of use us for a buy off us because we know what we're doing and we'll do what's right for them.
I think we realised as well quickly that Ireland is small.
Yeah.
You know, and remember at the start, like, for whatever reason, a lot of our clients end up being in Cavan, Monaghan, up the north. And they're small areas. So, like, if you dealt with one company and you tried to get into another company, kind of knew each other.
Mm.
So, so definitely trust became a key part of it. And as Vincent said, like, you know, just going to meeting clients, once they know that you're telling them the truth and you know what you're talking about, you can back it up.
Mm.
That's kind of...
What, in terms of generating new business, is client referral a big part of the business?
It is. Like, I think we still do outbound calls ourselves. We're lucky that the retention rate, are kind of that mid to high 90% rate, means that we have a large, very large client book that we add to every year. But it is referral-based. It is from... bringing their white paper documents and then kind of educating people. And then it is just if you're cold calling, still ourselves, team if you're pick up clients by cold calling still.
Mm. And what about the you know, have you got capital investors in the business and how important, if you do, how important are they aligned in terms of having them aligned to what you're doing and what your goal is for the business?
Yeah, so look, the type of business it is, from the start, we never needed any capital.
Okay, capital-like business. Yeah.
So I had savings from my time as an accountant. Not a lot of savings, but it was enough to have a car, and we had free office space off our brother in Fermoy for a year. But the way we grew the business would be prudently. You know, my own background would be risk adverse of taking on huge risk of taking on a lot of staff that we might be able to pay. So really it was hiring one or two people every year, and it grew organically, but we did it from our own cash that was coming into the business. So just, you know, there was never a requirement for capital from outside or debt finance.
Mm-hmm. But now, if you've gotten bigger, is organic growth still the way to go? Or do you think there is a deal out there? I'm not going to ask you who it would be or anything, but is there a deal that could really move the needle for the business?
I still think we made a decision ourselves some time back that organic growth is still where we're at. Right, like, we still have capacity within the company to grow it and grow it organically. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we'll be going looking for third party finance. I think we can grow it organically. And
the engineering side of the business is where we see a lot of growth. So bringing that in, that may require in the future, depending on what projects that we might invest in for clients. There may be some investment there, but at the moment there is none.
And are there many other operations out there like you guys? This is, you know, at the start you said there wasn't, maybe two, three things. About now, and now in terms of that space that you're in, are there many businesses out there doing what you do?
I would say at the scale that we're at, probably two to three at our scale. At a smaller scale, there might be 50.
Right.
Yeah.
And would it make any sense to acquire any of them to bulk up or...
You know what? Maybe, like, you can never rule it in or rule it out. At the moment, it's a no. Like, as I said, like, from our point of view, we still have capacity within the company to grow it. And we still have a lot of stuff for me, St. Vincent, to succeed with or succeed in within the company.
Yeah.
Like, we look at the engineering team and there's a lot of growth. We have a lot of clients. A lot of companies want to do sustainability projects. So now we actually need to marry the engineering team with those clients. A lot of those clients aren't even aware that we have an engineering team. So I think that's where the growth will be going forward for us. Mm-hmm. And then potentially we may look at, you know, if there's projects that need to be done, could we raise EIIS funding for some of those projects? So I think for us, that will be the area of growth going forward.
The other thing too is, you know, with a lot of businesses, you know, with success sometimes comes the risk of distraction, right? And you mentioned about the engineering business as a natural add-on, right? But I'm sure when you look out and as you're going through the video, you kind of go, geez, we could be doing that, we could be doing that. And there's always a risk that you start chasing all of these different things. And it's not that they're the wrong thing to chase, but it might be the wrong thing at the time or the amount of work that it takes to get it to a critical mass would never result in the return that you could be getting by, as you say, let's focus on the engineer now. Let's really build that and get that to the next level.
Yeah, look, I think we have made a decision to have a narrow focus. We're in a very fortunate position that we have a very strong client base that trust what we do. We have a very good relationship with them and it's adding more services to what we do. And as mentioned, the engineering side of the business came about through clients querying and asking for advice in that section. So for us looking outside the energy sphere, you know, we haven't. We're going to keep it narrow and just really give the staff that we have the ability to come up with ideas themselves and use them and use their knowledge to help grow the company as well. Because we're very careful, the staff that we take on, we always try and get staff that are actually that we consider better than ourselves.
Right.
You know, that will keep driving us on. Because like we drove the business to a certain level, but we need other people as good or better than us to drive it further. And we're very happy with who we've hired. We're very careful over that process. And it's a small team, so it's very important to get it right.
But, you know, as you think about it, though, like if we think about the engineering being the second leg to the stool, do you think there is potentially at some point a third leg to the stool or a fourth leg to the stool within that energy space?
For us, at the moment, no.
Right.
I think that, you know, so from our point of view, if you're any business owner, they have two things they want to do. Number one, they want to get your energy and procure it as cost effectively as possible. Mm-hmm. And then number two, they'll say to us, well, guys, how do you really drive our price down and say, do efficiency projects? Mm-hmm. You know, like if you can put solar on your roof, it'll meet maybe 25-30% of your demand. You put solar on your roof, you avoid all of the regulator charges because you're connecting into the meter. Those regulator charges out of 26 cents per kilowatt hour could be 12, 13 cent.
It's big.
Massive.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So like we'd say at any company, and especially during when energy prices were very high and pass-through charges, like I had a meeting in Scotland recently with a client of ours, a large client, and they were saying, oh guys, the market has been coming down. This is pre-Iran. The market has been coming down at a steady rate. And they were tracking the market and they were saying, how's your spend still significantly higher than 2019? But they're not in the Irish market looking at it every day. But like we could show them that the regulator pass-through charges have gone up by 6 cents per kilowatt hour since 2019. For them, that was €700,000 of an increase. So like, even if energy prices stay stable since that time, they were still $700,000 up.
Yeah.
So how would you avoid that? Looking at efficiency projects. Mm. So unless something else comes into the space that can make a real difference, we think there's two stools at the moment, or two legs to that stool.
Mm. And what's the hardest part of the job being the bosses of the business?
Now look, for me, I think this where my St. Vincent differ maybe a small bit is I find it very hard to switch off.
Okay.
You know? But I actually genuinely enjoy my job.
Hmm.
But it can be all consuming.
Hmm.
You know, like you spend your time reading articles on the Saturday, reading them on the Sunday. I'm not giving out about it.
Hmm.
I enjoy it. But at the same time, it's difficult to switch off. You go on holidays, it's hard to switch off. So from, like, you speak to a lot of people and say, like, yeah, look, managing people is difficult. Mm. For us, managing people isn't difficult. You know, as Vincent said, for whatever reason, company-wise, culture-wise, the way people gel together, that's not a difficult part of the job. For me, it's just kind of switching off. I remember you, Vince.
Yeah, look, typically, like, I can switch off. You know, I have three young kids. Mm-hmm. Like, they definitely help me switch off. I have no option to. But the whole energy space, like, even for the last couple of weeks with the Iran war, like, it's in the news everywhere you look. If you open a paper, if you turn on RT News, if you turn on anything, it's the first thing you're seeing. So at times, it can be overwhelming in that, in those times. But thankfully, those times are very few. But yeah, that would be the probably the hardest part for me when it really is a price up like the bar the air.
Touched on it briefly there, but what would you say is the essence of the culture in the business now, and how has it changed maybe from when the 2E set it up way back when?
I think at the beginning, we were probably hiring at the start for experience.
Okay.
So, you know, we were paying a salary to somebody in sales that came in, and we were kind of going, Jesus, you know, this guy needs to hit the ground running when they come in, and they need to deliver. And then as you go along, I think what changes is that you bring in senior people, but then the hires that come in then could be more junior to that, and you're taking people hiring out of college and they don't have a track record. So then you're basing on your hunch, you know, do they fit in with the company? Do they understand where we'd like them to get to? Will they buy in? So I think that's the thing that changes over time. And just trying to get the whole culture where everyone gels together and everyone's on the same sheet. Mm.
Then as the business gets bigger and bigger, right, at some point it's going to be, you know, you guys can't be on the shop floor to a certain extent. You can't be doing the day job that you're doing now. You won't be doing, right, because there'll be just so much other things. Do you worry about that day and that, because you both love what you're doing right now
Vincent, Vincent has kind of developed, Vincent has a trading team that report into him.
Right.
But like, he's already kind of started that process probably 2.5 years ago.
Okay.
So I think you can.
Yeah, no, look, as I mentioned, having staff that you consider at your level or even better, it's very easy to hand over to them and give them responsibility. So at the very start, it's a tough decision because you've built a relationship with 20, 30 clients. You've been working for a number of years, but gradually over the last 3 or 4 years, I've begun handing those off to the traders with ourselves, and they deal with it and they're doing an exceptionally good job. So it makes that transition easier.
Do you feel like you just need to get out of their way and let them do what they do?
Yeah, it is. But even the remote working, you know, like that was forced upon us. Mm-hmm. But like, we only do one day in the office.
Okay.
We do this, and everyone else, so we have staff in Limerick and Dublin. We have a sub office in Kilkenny. We have the main office in Cork, in Cork City. But we can trust our staff 100% that they're working and getting their job done. You know, and giving staff that autonomy that they don't have myself and John and ringing them every day going, what are you doing? You know, we leave them. They have their tasks. They have their clients. They run it. But that level of autonomy gives them the ability to grow in their role, but also to be innovative. And they come back to us with suggestions saying, you know what, we can do this better. Mm-hmm. And that is happening all of the time. I think you agree, John, that like, especially over the last 6 months, we're making changes for the better, making ourselves more efficient. Mm-hmm. And that's been driven by the staff. Mm-hmm.
Who do you seek advice from, or who have you sought advice from since you started the business?
Lovely, Carl, you know, our brother at the start would have been a great sounding board. He was there. He's done it. He gave us the confidence to actually go ahead and be an entrepreneur. Mm. So Carl definitely would have been, and still is really, in sales, John.
Still is. Like if ever I'm hit a brick wall, I'll ring Karen and go, what would you do, you know, here? We've one or two friends that have their own businesses as well. Mm. So we can share kind of shared experiences that we have, and they're people that we go to. but we're pretty good at speaking to each other, you know, being frank about things as well. And then the senior members of the team within Exemplar, we go to them as well and say, guys, what do you think? What's your view here?
Yeah.
This is what we're thinking. So, like, with St. Vincent, there have never been of that kind of mindset that, you know, our view is better than your view, or this, we're smarter than you in this area or that area. Give an opinion. But, like, if I'm looking for help, 9 times out of 10, I'll be going to Cairn.
Yeah. But I think we're lucky that we have each other, you know, from the very start.
Yeah.
Like, I actually couldn't imagine trying to set up a business or doing it alone.
Mm.
You know, so having somebody at start when for the first 2 years you're not making an income.
Yeah.
You know, to drive on, it's a shared experience. And the fact that you can go through and plan with somebody else, I think made a huge difference for us, and it lessened the need for us to be speaking to anyone external for assistance.
Yeah, the other thing too about it is when you're setting that business up, you know, you have a hell of an awful lot of jobs, as we said earlier on, that you've got to do to set up a business. That having somebody else and being in a position that you're going to rely on somebody else to catch the other stuff that you're not good at, it makes a huge difference to the speed of development of the business. That you're not trying to, you know, I wouldn't say you're wasting your time, but your time is being dragged away from you on topics that either you're not good at or whatnot. And it'd be great to be able to go, Christ, at least somebody else is doing that for me.
But it's even true, you know, from a sales perspective. So Jonathan could focus on sales to start. I was doing the accounting, invoicing, following up and getting paid, anything to do with the bank. So I could imagine if you're on your own in that position trying to do sales, something would fall.
Yeah.
You know, so we were lucky that it wasn't even spoken about. It was just delegated immediately, and that definitely helped us from the start.
I often have an idea out there that you know, as a boss of a business, you know, you don't necessarily get better at the job, right? But you get quicker at making the important decisions. You kind of see through the fog very, very quick. You get better at seeing through the fog and making the decision.
Agree. And I think you also get to the point where I think with experience you can make decisions faster.
Yeah.
And like you find that like you'll go onto Teams calls and you'll be like, damn it, like this call should be 5 minutes, not 25.
Yeah.
I think that's something that experience gives you. And experience gives you that confidence as well to actually maybe say in the call, look, guys, this needs to be a 5-10 minute call, not something that goes on for half an hour. Mm. So yeah, look, I think business will make it battle hardened, you know? Like we've been lucky, we've had each other. Business has been good since we started. As I said, like we haven't needed any bank finance. So we didn't have that that burden on us. We started young, bought our girlfriends at the time that ended up being our wives. So we had a good support network, but we never had the financial burden either, which I think made life a bit easier.
Was fear of failure ever a driving force for you?
Massive, yeah. Yeah. Like I would have said it for years, like Niamh, my wife, her mum's birthday kind of falls towards the end of Christmas. But I always used to say it to Niamh, 31st of December, dreaded that year. Because no matter how good the year was, I always felt that once I went to the first of the year, you were starting at zero.
Yeah. Yeah, clock so, resets.
Yeah, yeah. So I've definitely, there was one thing, like you ran up earlier about what kept you awake at night. That probably did. You know, I was always going to go, okay, we're in the month of June or July. What's the year being like? Yeah, no, things are going good. And then I'd be happy then for the rest of the year, knowing that we've had a good start of the year, a good midsection of the year. But then at the very end, I'd always kind of go, oh, the meter starts again tomorrow at zero, and we're going for it again. But as I say, like again, business type we're in, but retention rate, and we're not out constantly looking for new business. We know with the confidence that the retention rate has been at the same level for the last 8 or 9, 10 years.
On an ever-growing book. Which
yeah,
is the other
on,
thing
on a growing book, about, correct. You know. Correct. So like, I don't have, there's one risk I don't have anymore. I don't have that dread anymore of December 31st.
Yeah. And I actually wouldn't have that. I never had the risk of like the fear of failure. As the way I looked at it, I was going to give it a go for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
I didn't have children at the time, didn't have a mortgage. It was fairly risk-free.
Yeah.
And I knew I had the accounting to fall back on if it didn't. So yeah, I was happy. And then after probably year 3 or 4, I could see the revenue stream was growing and we were keeping what we were having. So the confidence really from then was high that we had a business.
Mm-hmm. What do you think was the sliding door moment for the business? That it could have gone either way and it went the right way for you. Was there one? Was Ukraine a big sliding door moment for you?
Not the Ukraine. It was before that. Nothing jumps out. It's just, you see, the way the business grew organically, it was just tipping away with getting more. And then I suppose it got up to a level 3 years in that we actually give ourselves a salary. And then the next year we give ourselves a higher salary and grow from there. So there was no real sliding door moment that actually changed the way our business operates.
We've been lucky, like we've had no moment of fear.
Yeah,
you know that.
Back against the wall.
Yeah, back and never. We've never had that. Yeah. And again, like, you know, I have to thank, you know, Vinny for that as well, that, you know, I never log into like our bank account. You know, don't think I've ever logged in, you know, to the company bank account. And I've been fortunate because I never had to. So Vincent's been always prudent that it's always been like company is first, protection of who's working with Exemplar is more important than us. So like us taking very low salaries at the very beginning for a number of years was what we had to do. But I never questioned it. You know, it was like, Vincent, what are we doing? And Vinny, but that's what we're doing. That's fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Is there a certain comfort there in that you, it allows you to focus on what you want to do and what you're good at?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And look, but it's down to trust. Yeah. And I knew that he was doing the best thing for me and I'm doing the best thing for him. And that's it. So then you're in it together.
Customers are great oftentimes at telling you what's wrong with something without necessarily telling you how to fix it. And in a way, in your case, maybe the customers don't know what's wrong because they've never looked at it. So you're almost the reverse. You're kind of going to, you don't realise the problem you have made and we have the solution for you.
Yeah, no, you're right. That actually is it. Like, well, we could have to go into a client and they're in the wrong product. Either it was sold by a supplier incorrectly or if they made a wrong decision themselves. But they could be on a product that doesn't suit their usage profile or the way their work as a company. And it does take us to come in and explain it to them. So in our market, a lot of companies do make a mistake and you only find out it's a mistake during the year in the contract when their bills are either fluctuating too much or they're paying a lot more than they thought they would. So, and that's where we come in. So, but a lot of times we get there before, like, you know, where clients are always on a certain product and it's done okay for them. And then we go to them and we say, look, what do you want out of this? And they might say, look, we want green, we want, and they give us the issues they have. And then we go and we bask something that's correct for them or put up a strategy that fits into exactly what they require. And that goes back to the relationship with the energy suppliers that we can actually meet with them. They trust us. And we can work together to come up with a specific client.
And I think that's important as well, is that back to the time, like we're around a while and it's to kind of check in all at the time to make sure you don't get complacent.
Yeah.
Because like it's our job to come up with the ideas for products as well, to say.
To be innovative.
Yeah. Be innovative and to say, like, you know, why can't this product work? Can we do this product? And that's why, you know, kind of back again to the guys working with us and the girls with us, is that if they come to us with ideas, then we have to listen to them and say, great idea, you know? And then my job then is to meet the suppliers with Vincent. And even this morning we had a meeting with one of the suppliers in Dublin. And that was discussed, you know, these are ideas that we have going forward. So it's being able to innovate, but also we need people behind us, driving us on to innovate as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you obsess about the small things in the business?
Probably. It may be before, but not as much. Mm-hmm. You know, like in the last number of years, definitely for myself, I'm able to hand a lot more over to the staff. They're very good. They probably are more worried about the smaller things now, like I used to before, but I trust them. You know, and like, you know, issues that happen do still rise up to ourselves, but they're very few and they're typically easily resolved.
And how do you deal with setbacks in the business?
Just try and overcome them, you know, like sit down, have a chat with the management team, with Vincent, and just say, look, is there a way out of this? plan for it, execute it. Yeah, that's how we deal with setbacks. Mm. Again, we've been lucky. There's been few setbacks that we have. Setbacks are like, the market's more competitive, there's more competition in the market. Suppliers have come into the market, suppliers have left the market. So they're the things that you kind of focus on now, focus on the engineering side to grow that. Setbacks in that area would be, small examples would be that, you know, we're charging a client for 8 days consultancy, then we check the engineers and they put 12 days work into it. Mm. You find out that you're not making money on it.
Yeah.
So they're the setbacks that we have at the moment, is kind of kind of getting into the detail on some areas and saying, okay, how can we start making margin on these areas or making money on them? So they're the setbacks that we have.
The industry is one that is subject to a huge amount of change, right? Whether the development of the industry or external macro things like wars and blah, 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 blah. Do they energize you in the business? Or do you know, there's two ways that you can be very worried about them and people kind of shelter in on them, or there's other people who almost get energy from all the change that's going on and it kind of puts them on the front foot.
Oh, look, there's no doubt it gives you energy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like when this happens straight away, you're kind of going, okay, this is gas related. You know, what products out there can we look at that aren't gas indexed?
Yeah.
And for us, like, then they're the solutions we're looking for. So, like, that energizes you, like, up to, for January, February of this year, they were normal 2 months. It was business as usual. Mm-hmm. So, like, business going along very steady, people doing their job. This happened. But then you'd have guys on to us at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, and they're going, I'm thinking of this, I'm thinking of that. It definitely gives you energy.
Yeah.
It gives you the energy to... I suppose our job with clients is to stay close.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. Energy is complex. Example, I have to stay close. And that gives you energy to go, my phone's going to be ringing tomorrow.
Mm.
And they're ringing because they expect us to have an answer.
Mm-hmm. It's like that idea. The real death for you guys is if the phone doesn't ring, if the customer thinks you're not the person to be ringing in a certain way.
Yeah, look, I also, like, you know, with St. Vincent, at one time we were probably doing 70,000 kilometres a year driving. And I used to say to my wife, the day I'm not in the car is the day I'm going to be worried.
Yeah.
You know, people don't want to see me anymore.
Yeah.
People aren't ringing my phone anymore.
Yeah.
Now, we went away my small fella's birthday last week, went to Centre Parks. But we up on the Friday, my phone was ringing for the whole, and even my son Tiernan, 7, and he was like, Dad, are you on the phone all the time? And I went,
yep.
You know, but you know what? That doesn't happen, but it's just an odd time. But yeah. I said to Niamh, the phone's ringing because... stuff is going on. Yeah, people want answers and they want reassurance and they want.
But even back to a point you're making around, you know, worrying or being energized, like, experience helps us to be more energized than worried now.
Yeah.
So, like, back at you in the Ukraine when that happened, that was a big concern.
Yeah.
Because suppliers stopped pricing, you couldn't get contracts.
Yeah.
Some suppliers were pulling contracts that were in place. So, like, it was a very difficult time and that was stressful. But now what's happening is, to a lesser extent, but we've learned, you know, that we got through before, we helped clients through it, we did what's best for them, and we'll do the same again.
Yeah.
You know, so we're definitely more energized now.
Weathered a storm.
And, yeah.
And I think this time, energy suppliers have been quick to call us.
Yeah.
They said, look, guys, just want to give you reassurance that we will be pricing contracts. We will be. So I think they've learned from mistakes as well in the past, where they went, we've never seen anything like this before, and let's pull down the shutters and let us figure this out. And to the credit of the energy suppliers, they figured that out.
Yeah.
So, like, that definitely gives us reassurance with it. We can speak to clients and say, look, you know, we're onto your supplier. They will do this or they will do that.
Yeah, yeah. Do you hate losing or love winning?
Hate losing.
Hate losing.
Yeah.
Yeah, hate losing.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a question we it's funny, it breaks down about 50-50 between people, and sometimes I'd ask that question, I'd expect the love winning bit and it's actually the hate losing. I would have thought it'd be love winning.
Really? Yeah.
When
you're from Cork at the moment, it's not much winning going on, so.
And then in terms of decision making, are you fast or slow decision making?
Fast.
Yeah. And is it data based or gut feel?
Gut feel for me.
database for you.
Yeah. I'm showing my stripes, yeah.
Again, you might not have thought of this one, but do you have an exit strategy from the business? Have you thought about it even?
No. Like, we just turned 43 last week.
Hmm.
Far too young to even think about it. And, you know, back to that question then, energy. Like, do we have as much energy that we had when we were 26? Mm. Personally, I would say I don't, because we have families, think of. I have kids who drop the soccer at 4 o'clock on a Wednesday. So there's more to our life than there was at 26. But what happens, you'll find, is that younger people come into the business, they're freshening it up, and they have that drive that you had at 26, 27, 28. But you pass the baton onto them in a way. Yeah. And that's why we're very conscious that we don't hold onto everything very tight.
Yeah.
Like, the mistakes will get made by passing on responsibility, but you have to pass it on.
Yeah.
Like, the company won't, like Vincent and myself tried to grow the company on our own now. It won't happen.
So in the football analogy, you're going from player to be player manager now.
Yeah. Eventually you'll be just manager.
I'll be Marina with the trench coat on
exactly.
The sideline, yeah.
But we do feel there's a lot more growth in the company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot more on the procurement side and on you know, as mentioned, on the engineering side.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll see like the next 7-10 years, see where that brings us.
Mm. How do you feel about what you've already done in the company?
Yeah, proud. Yeah, there's no doubt. I think my mum and dad are probably more proud than anyone else. Mm. I think like my dad was an engineer and my mum did a brilliant job as a stay at home mum. And my dad was away a bit for work. And I definitely didn't think that they thought there was 3 entrepreneurs in the family, but there was. So proud. I'm definitely proud of what I've achieved. I'm proud of what Vincent have achieved. But also stay grounded, you know,
don't get complacent.
No, I don't get complacent. Don't get big headed about it. Just realize kind of that we're lucky.
Yeah, I think we realize that, you know, we're not going to sit here and say we're geniuses to set up a company. Like, as John alluded at the start, like you need a bit of timeness. You need a bit of luck. We got into a certain market at a good time. We're lucky enough to have the skill set that we're able to grow a business in it. So like, it's definitely proud of the business where it is, but also proud of the environment that we created. Like the staff we have stay with us.
Mm.
There's a couple of staff that are with us from a year in. They're still with us now. So that is something to be proud of, that they actually enjoy going to work and they enjoy what they do and they have the autonomy and the power really to drive the business.
And do you celebrate your wins?
Not really. No, I don't think so. No.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny
because I asked that question to a lot of people and I do think it's a bit sad that entrepreneurs don't celebrate, stop every now and again and kind of celebrate the wins that they've had. It's not that you're kind of saying we've now reached this line and we the race is run, but you're kind of saying, you know, they stop and just take a breather and say, actually, you know what? We have done great. It was great to win that. We have had a great year. And it's not that just to say it allows you to sit back on your laurels, but you just kind of recognize that. And particularly, I think, as you get more and more staff into the business, it becomes more important to do that. That they feel that there's a recognition and we did great. Okay, that's enough celebrating now. Get back to the job.
Yeah, right. Look, I suppose we didn't set any targets from the outset, you know, and we just go from year to year. And I suppose the target is to keep growing the business. But yeah, we certainly wouldn't be having Christmas dinner together celebrating saying that was a great year. We don't do it. We just go day by day in the job and trying every day to do it right, do what's right for the client wins.
Yeah, like I would say, like the exemplary team understand that the company's doing well.
Yeah.
You know, and they understand that we're grateful that it's doing well because of the work that they put in and because of what they do. So we're probably quicker to say well done to them than we are to ourselves.
That's what I mean, yeah. Yeah. So it's not you guys celebrating your wins, it's the company celebrating the win and marking the win that's important.
So like, we mark it with them, but personally yourselves,
yeah.
Vincent doesn't ring me on a random thing. So we did well.
And I asked both of you this because it'd be interesting to hear both of you. But what advice would you give to young people now? Well, it's not to say that you're old, right? But young people either starting out in career or starting out in college or whatnot.
Yeah, look, I think it's do something they have an interest in.
Yeah.
You know, because you can go down a route in college where, like, I started off, I did BIS in UCC, and it's a fantastic course. I didn't go into that with a huge interest in programming.
Mm.
You know, I'm probably using an Amstrad at home beforehand, you know, but I never did any program, never had a huge interest. I was more focused on the business side of it. But when you're young, it's very hard to know what you're interested in and what you want to do. But if somebody asked me in relation to setting up a company, it's you need to get into something and work in a space and opportunities will arise. Mm. I don't think you can step back and say, actually, I'm going to do X now and it will make me an income. Mm. You nearly need to pick a space like we did with the energy sector. And once you were in it, the folks of the company changed after a while from efficiencies to procurement, you know, kind of waited to one side. And that was true experience and actually being in the space. Mm. We would have never seen the opportunity had we stayed outside looking in.
Yeah.
I suppose the thing is to get into something they enjoy, but also
get your hands dirty,
yeah. And opportunities will come from the knowledge and being in the space.
Mm. What about
I think for me, I'm kind of more philosophical about it. I think it's just believe in yourself,
yeah.
But also just get a good mentor.
Mm.
You know, Carl will get big-headed when he hears the podcast, yeah. No doubt. But
well, if I edit that part out,
yeah. But I remember probably at first year of college, second year of college, Carl had set up a business that was different to what he's in now. But at the time, he was asking me to go to trade shows with him, hand out business cards, go to business networking groups. I remember he wanted me to open some event for him and I took up my stage and open because he didn't want to do it at the time. And that definitely gave me a grounding of this is what business is about.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know, did he know at the time? But he was mentoring me.
Mm-hmm.
And even in college, I remember when I was in business studies in college, the lecturer said to me, you know, what do you like to do? And I said, look, I want to be really successful. And 3 or 4 years' time is probably, I was dreaming big. But I kind of believed that I could do it. But maybe it was naive and I was kind of like chatting, oh, maybe get a job, you know?
Mm.
Just, you know, what you're saying here, I don't know, is this even attainable? You know, so like, back yourself, believe in yourself, but get a good mentor.
Yeah.
You know, and I say that to anyone, like at the moment, like if you're in college, and you kind of know yourself, if you're in college and you go, I'd like to work for myself maybe someday, get a mentor.
Yeah. And let them help you along the way.
Let them help you. But you know what? Ireland is small. Introductions.
Mm.
You know, what area would you like to get into? Oh, I'd like to get into engineering. I'd like to get into something. Yeah, actually, a mentor can probably
help you.
Yeah.
Right, lads, we've come to the black book question. Don't know what it's going to be. Better keep your fingers crossed.
Better be a good one.
All right. Now, I want a different answer from both of you on this one. But here's your question. Name one thing you would change about your business if you could. No boundaries, just one thing you could change. Change anything.
I think you can go first there, John.
That is a good question.
It is.
Probably would have scaled it maybe a bit faster.
Okay.
Yeah. I think a little looking back, what do you think, Ben? You know, like when we came into market in 2009, very little competition. Even though we've done well, probably could have pushed it a bit more.
Right.
That's hindsight, though.
Yeah.
Like hindsight is, yeah, you know, at the time we did stuff right, we did it prudently. It's paid off for us. Like I see some companies in our space in the UK recently going bust, and it's because they've 140, 150 employees and they're probably scaled too fast.
Yeah.
But like, if you'd ask me kind of here, on the spot, maybe yeah, could have grown it a bit faster.
Mm-hmm. I suppose one thing I'd change maybe from a technology standpoint, you know, I think we're doing it now, but it's something we should have done before now is kind of really get technology to help us do our job. Obviously, you have all the normal, like Excel is probably a key tool that we use, but there's smart ways to do it, more efficient ways to do it. And thankfully, we're in the process of a digital transformation of the company. I think it's coming with something that we should have done before now, I believe.
And do you think, just as an aside, do you think AI could be a huge benefit to the, yes, to the business going forward?
Yeah, I think every business, you know, yeah, especially like I think AI isn't something that we're scared of. It's something that we're going to utilize to make us better at what we do.
Yeah. All right, well, that's it for this episode of Everyday Business with Aidan Donnelly. I'd just like to thank my guests, Jonathan and Vincent Fitzpatrick. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe, or comment if you enjoyed what you heard. Many thanks, and we will see you next time.
The participants in this podcast have done so for the purpose of sharing their own individual business experiences. Some are clients of Davy and some are not. They have not received a gratuity or other payment for their time in making the podcast. The views expressed throughout are their own. Warning: the information in this podcast is not a recommendation or investment research. It does not purport to be financial advice. You should speak to your advisor in the context of your own personal circumstances prior to making any financial or investment decision. In the Republic of Ireland, J&E Davy Unlimited Company, trading as Davy and Davy Private Clients, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Davy is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group. In the United Kingdom, Davy Private Clients UK, Davy UK and Davy Capital Markets UK are the trading names of J&E Davy UK Limited. J&E Davy UK Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. J&E Davy UK Limited is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group.